All right, let's get into talking about some actual ethical concepts and ethicists who have argued about this. Now, in general, what I'm going to do throughout the semester is go chronologically. I don't know if this there are other ways one could do it, but we're going to go chronologically. And if we're going chronologically, there are philosophers and people who talked about this sort of thing before Plato, but there's what better place to start than Plato. Now, we're going to stay around this ancient Greek time period for a little while. And as I said, there are other ancient Greeks prior to Plato, but Plato is kind of a big deal. he's really the one of the most influential, if not the most influential thinker, perhaps of all time. And if we didn't have Plato, who knows? Who knows what we would have lost? Who knows what we wouldn't have? It's of course unclear. No one can say for sure, but definitely massively influential, even on other huge names that came right after him, like Aristotle and even Epicurus, who we're going to talk about later on as well, and of course, pretty much everybody who came after him. Now, when we're talking here about Plato, before we begin, before we delve into the selection, the excerpt I've given you for Plato, we have to get a little bit of background out of the way. So, one of the things that we should realize, one of the things that we're going to find, is that ethics and ethical theory, while being fairly diverse, can generally be understood in terms of three different basic approaches to morality. And we're going to cover, of course, this big three over the course of the semester here, but chronologically, the big three starts back here with Plato, with what is called virtue ethics. The other two, of course, we'll find out, are called deontology, or duty-based ethics, and consequentialism. And we're going to get examples and good, great thinkers in all three of these different kinds. And we'll even talk about some things besides those big three as well. But in any case, virtue ethics. Now, when we're looking back at Plato, we're looking back at Plato's time, it's important to note some of the things that are happening at the time. Now, Plato is thinking and working in, indeed, ancient Greece, and at the time, this is a system which can be described as a democracy, but it's, of course, quite different than our current democracy. It was a place where people could go and vote and voice their opinions and have a say. But not quite like we have. We have a representative democracy called a republic, and Plato's was not quite like that. But we don't need to get into that right now. But in any case, the idea here that Plato is, and that virtue ethics in general is approaching, is different than some other ideas that we'll talk about later. Now, here's the thing about virtue ethics that differentiates it. Put it in pretty simple terms here. Normally, I'd be willing to bet that normally when you think about or approach an ethical question, when you have a moral decision to make, when you are coming up against some sort of choice of action, where you can do this or you can do that or you can do something else, and you're weighing the morality of each, the question that comes to your mind is action-oriented, right? In other words, you have three options for action, A, B, and C. And you ask yourself, is this action, is action A the right action, the right thing to do, or the wrong thing to do? Action B, right or wrong? Action C, right or wrong? Is the action good or bad? Is the action right or wrong? In other words, the main question you're asking is probably, what actions ought I perform? What should I do? How should I act? Now, that's an extraordinarily common way of approaching this. And I'm not, and by any means, suggesting that it's wrong or incorrect. We're going to see plenty of folks who take that very approach. But that's not the virtue ethics approach. That's not the approach that virtue ethicists like Plato are going to employ. The main thing here, the main question that a virtue ethicist like Plato is going to ask is not what should I do or what actions should I perform, but rather the question he's going to ask is what kind of person should I be? In other words, here's the thing. The normal, the common way of thinking about morality, probably the way you think about morality, and say being a good person, is probably something like this. You think a good person is someone who does good things, right? In other words, you figure out what the right things to do are, you do them, and the result is that you're a good person. But that, according to a virtue ethicist, is getting it backwards. That's getting it the wrong way around. What a virtue ethicist is going to say is, no. A good person will, because he or she is a good person, do the right things. In other words, you become a good person first, and then the morally correct or right actions follow from it. You make yourself a good person first, and the consequence or the result of that is that you'll do the right things. So, instead of focusing on actions, and then the result of those good actions is that you're a good person, you focus on the person. You make yourself a good person, and then the result of that is that you will do good things. So, what kind of person should I be? Well, a virtuous person. The answer there is pretty straightforward. A virtuous person. You've all heard, I'm sure, of virtue before. Virtue is, of course, as opposed to vice. Somebody who is virtuous is sort of the opposite of somebody who is vicious. Vicious, of course, is ruled by vice, where virtuous is someone who is ruled by virtue. So, if the goal, if the focus should be on making oneself virtuous, well, then we have to first understand, what the hell does that mean? What is virtue? What does it mean to say someone is a virtuous person? How do I do this? What are the virtues? How do I understand what one has to do to be virtuous? Now, that is what we're going to discuss and what this excerpt from Plato that I've given you is going to discuss. Now, there's some interesting things happening here in this exchange. As you may know, Plato wrote lots of things, and pretty much all of the stuff that he wrote, except for letters and things like that, take the form of dialogues. They take the form of an exchange between interlocutors, between different speakers. Now, this is oftentimes a very useful way of writing, and it's in fact the only way that Plato did write. This is, of course, as opposed to Aristotle, who wrote in a different way. We'll talk about Aristotle, of course, later on. But what's happening in this particular dialogue, in this particular exchange, is indeed a discussion about what virtues are. What does it mean to say someone is a virtuous person? How can we understand what these things mean in an individual person? And what Plato does here is something quite interesting. He's thinking, well, you know, finding out or understanding what the virtues are in an individual might be a little bit difficult. Maybe if we can define virtue by using a sort of a little bit easier method, then once we know what those virtues are, we can then go look for them in an individual person. Because, I mean, if we can define something like courage, then it shouldn't matter where we find the courage. We ought to be able to recognize it. So what Plato suggests is, well, let's look at the state. Let's look at our society. We talk about societies being good or bad, being virtuous or vicious. We talk about societies being wise or courageous or temperate or just. Well, what exactly do we mean when we say those things about a state or a society? What would a just or courageous or wise or temperate society be? What would it mean to say the state is those things? So, if we can identify these virtues in the state, then we're going to be able to extrapolate that. We're going to be able to look in individual people for the same thing. Because why would courage in a state be different than courage in an individual? But it's probably easier to understand, at least this is Plato's thinking, it's easier to understand what that courage means in what he calls the individual writ large. He's thinking of a state, of a society, sort of just like a big, humongous person. That might sound a little bit strange, but, you know, we still kind of act that way, don't we? I mean, we say things like a certain state or a certain government or a certain society is just or unjust or vicious or militaristic or courageous or cowardly. We say that sort of stuff about societies, and when we talk about different actions, about things that are done on the world stage, we say things like, well, North Korea did this, or China did this, or Japan did this, or whatever, you know? I mean, we talk about countries, about states acting, doing things. So thinking of the state as an individual writ large is maybe not as wacky as it initially might sound. So, as we're getting into this excerpt, keep in mind that at the time, what Plato is interested in are virtues. We're looking for the virtues, and when we're talking about virtues in Plato's time, we're talking about virtues in this dialogue, we're looking for some chief, main, important virtues. And the chief important virtues that Plato is discussing in this dialogue are wisdom, courage, temperance, and justice. Wisdom, of course, is a word you're familiar with. Courage is, of course, a word you're familiar with, as is justice. Temperance, maybe not. Maybe a word you've heard before, but you may not be quite sure what it means. Well, we'll figure that out. We'll look at what's going on in this excerpt. Now, where we pick up is after the discussion about wisdom has happened, and the focus is now turning to courage. And I'll say a few things about wisdom, because wisdom in a lot of ways is very similar to courage in this discussion. So we're going to look at courage. I'll retroactively say a few things about wisdom, but we're going to look at courage first. So next thing to do, get this excerpt up, get it handy, and we'll talk about it and how these virtues fit in coming up.